The Books That Made Me.
Right, so this is The Books That Made Me. Let me introduce our guest first of all. Omar Sharif is the co-founder of gaming store Geeky Lizard. He is our guest today. It is a 100% Emirati-owned business, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yes.
And he's going to be talking about the comic books that made quite an impression on him growing up and also today. Your life is comics and gaming, so it seems only fitting that the books that made you would be comic books.
Well, I would say comic books, when I would like to joke about them, they're colorful or more entertaining books. Or I would say, the wife and I would say, she's the opposite of me. She prefers books over comic books. Then she would call comic books with less... Like, we always have our arguments, because a lot of people in this world, they think, oh, comic books are for children, and they think books are for adults. So where we stand over today and look at the cinema culture and you look at the world around you these days and the writers that write comic books these days, you'd be surprised that it's not the case anymore.
Mm. Yeah, I often wonder about this, and I'm glad you brought it up because that was something I wanted us to discuss today. I know you've got like a selection of comics that you want to talk us through and the time in your life that you read them, but the perception of comic books is an interesting one, because at the same time as it's filling out cinemas, or that all these comic book characters are filling out cinemas time and time again throughout the year, there is still the perception that they are less than, that they are not literature, that they are kind of a sub form of it. And here's Stan Lee actually addressing this in a documentary years ago.
By the early 70s, Stan Lee was king of the Marvel Universe, but he felt it was a realm without honor. So he embarked on a quest to win respect for his art and himself.
I used to give an example during my speeches. If Michelangelo and Shakespeare were alive today, And if Shakespeare said, "Hey, Mike, how about you and me doing a comic strip? I'll write it, you draw it." And Michelangelo said, "Great idea, Bill." And they sat down and they did a comic strip. Who would dare to say that wasn't an art form?
I thought that was quite well put.
Completely 100% agree. But then some certain crowd of people would think that Michelangelo is, again, real art. An art that's done that looks like, you know, Powerpuff Girls, or looks like, you know, an anime, or looks like Naruto, will think it's a children's thing, which is, again, evolving now, and you can see that even parents now are enjoying it.
Mm. I do notice that there doesn't seem to be a kind of group of people more ready to argue about these things than people who read comic books. Like, it is fraught with discussion and debate in a good way, I think, most of the time.
My late father taught me one thing. If you look at your hand, there's 5 different fingers. They don't look the same, and everybody's different. When we were forced, oh, you have to play sports. We're like, no, I'd rather sit down and scribble on my, you know, note, but like in my school textbook. And, you know, as we get older and you wanted to know the history of my comic books also evolve with the reader. You know, the first time I saw a comic book was in Safest Way and Sheikh Zayed Road.
How old were you?
I'm probably like 8. My mom would take me grocery shopping. Back then, the weekend was Thursday and Friday, so probably Thursday morning she took me, and I saw all these colorful books. Usually I'd read the Arabic book Majid, which is the Arabic comic book done locally, and then I saw this, you know, this comic book where the art was more edgy, was really cool. There's a guy in a costume, and it was Spider-Man, and he was fighting the lizard. And I was a big dinosaur fan. So the moment I saw a reptilian humanoid, I was like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I picked up a copy with broken English. I started reading it. And then I got back to the same bookstore. It was Safest Way or Safeway at the time. I think they changed names. Then I saw my second comic book. I picked it up. And I remember the image was smeared, you know, sorry, it was like burnt into my memory. And it was Wolverine, black and white, and he was under a waterfall. And this is an artwork that is still, you can still Google, it's a very famous image of him, artwork of him, and I had that comic in my hand. And then I was like blown away. And then when my English got better and I started picking up comic books, and as I got older, you know, Judge Dredd became a thing. I really liked that Dark City concept. Batman, Catwoman, and Robin was a thing. I would always pick, I thought Catwoman was the hottest thing on the planet. Like, you know, which is quite funny. A lot of Emirati women look like her these days. They try to do the same cheekbones and nose and everything.
Yeah. Catwoman got there first.
Yeah,
Catwoman's got her
fans. He started the trend.
Emirati al-Qatwa. And then, you know, I got to know the X-Men, the Generation X. At that time, I was a teenager.
Right, okay.
So I really enjoyed Generation X more than I enjoyed the X-Men and X-Force, because Generation X is about teenagers struggling with their mutant powers, where X-Men were more adults. So I can see, like, this person's, complaining about girls, and he also has mutant powers. This one can't take girls out because he's going to set her on fire by accident. Mm-hmm. So you can see that awkwardness that we need to take.
It's that relatability, isn't it, mm-hmm. that's absolutely amazing about comic books. Because even though you're saying that, they sometimes get played down as less than literature and all of that, but every comic book has this incredible ability to mm-hmm. have a moral or a guidance through it that kind of it makes you question and all of that. It's really relatable literature.
And and then I was looking for art styles. So since I was a kid, I was a big fan of anime. So I was always looking for art style that is more closer to anime. So some artists, I didn't even know their names till later in life. John Madreira, Jim Lee. And I was keeping it. That's why I picked up the X-Men, because those artists were working on it in the 98s. And the villains, you can't. A story is as good as the villain. And that's what people are repeating these days. So I had to pick up the comics with Magneto or Sabretooth. And I always found it fascinating that I can relate. For example, a Black Panther, the movie, I think Killmonger probably was one of the best villains the past 5 or 10 years. Because you can relate where he's coming from, this background, And as I got older, my friend brought some Image comics from the U.S. and I got introduced to Spawn, which is they're making a reboot soon.
Ooh, exciting.
With, I keep forgetting his name, with Jamie Foxx, is it?
My favorite fact about Spawn, the comic, is that the original film, who starred in the original one? Was it?
I can't remember.
All I know is that apparently Snoop Dogg was considered and actually read for the part. Take a moment to think about that film starring Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, that would change it completely.
I'll leave you with that.
Wow, I can't imagine him as Spawn. The soundtrack would have changed.
For the uninitiated, who is Spawn?
Spawn is one of the few African-American or black superheroes, you can say. And it's not even a superhero. The comic book is really dark, and it's not for kids. So when
You read this later, didn't you?
I read this as a teenager.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you meant to have read it as a teenager.
Yes, of course. Don't forget, ratings in the U.S. are different than ratings here. Like, God of War is plus 21, but God of War is probably 15 plus or 17 plus, or even lower. You never know. And so Spawn had serial killers, had crazy ice truck guys with it was just a lot of insanity in it, and it was so dark, and I was like, wow, this is scary stuff. And originally Spawn the movie was supposed to be made into a horror movie, by the way, and Todd McFarlane was actually not happy with it, so they're going to make it a reboot, and they've already picked their lead, and I can't wait to see a horror version of Spawn. The same company, of course, they split off and they became Image Comics. Then there was Witchblade and the Darkness. I thought the Darkness was the coolest, anti-hero ever printed. I've got issue 1 to issue 11, all the different covers. And I was so sad when they rebooted it and they got a new set of team on it.
One thing, just in case anybody isn't familiar with any of these comics, I thought your choices for some of the comics that you enjoyed as a teen, so Spawn, Witchblade, and Darkness, they all have a character that has some form of law enforcement career, and then they have to control and wield powers that come from a source of severe darkness, chaos, or evil. And I think it brings up interesting questions of kind of legal versus spiritual justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if there was anything in particular. There's a running theme here, and I wondered what drew you to those when you were a teenager?
Well, okay. See, since I was a kid, if you turn on any radio channel back then or TV, and I always make this a joke out of this, it's always Habibi Habibi music, and it's the same lyrics, and it's always the same, soap opera. And we have a running joke saying that Ramadan TV shows are always like these sad dramas with very sad titles in Arabic. So when I switched to channel 33, I remember there were music videos playing on the TV, and I was blown away. There was the lyrics were different, the visual art was Beastie Boys, Sabotage, and David Bowie, and I was just blown away. And I think some Nine Inch Nails showed up as well, but I can't remember which track, because too early for me. I'm fasting, and I didn't have so I'm kind of running on low fuel. And also, we were at the store till 2 in the morning, I think. We were just gaming and hanging out. So then I was like a big culture shock. I had a lot of interest. And then I started seeing horror movies, I also read some Archie at some point in my life, and I enjoyed that. And I don't know, just became very immersed into Western culture. Like, there was a lot of more open literature that you can imagine than to what limitations we were available at the time.
I think my favorite of the three of them, that from just reading about them, before we go away for a couple of minutes, was possibly Witchblade. So you've got, I think I'm also drawn to the more female characters as well. So she's this NYP homicide detective. Her name's Sarah Pizzini.
Yes.
And she comes into possession of something called the Witchblade, which is a supernatural sentient gauntlet that bonds with a female host and provides her with a variety of powers in order to fight supernatural evil. So she's got this NYPD career, and then suddenly she's got this weird thing on her arms. Like, what do I do with this? I do like the initial moment where the character's like, oh my goodness, what is going on? I think that's the most entertaining part of it.
She had a show, by the way, in the 90s, yeah. I think. She had a show. It didn't do well. Witchblade, what I really, my entire life, I've been brought up by a very strong, independent woman. My dad was always away, and I have two older sisters that are compared to me, and people say, oh, you're a scary guy. I'm like, you haven't met my sisters. They're scarier. And my wife is so scared of them and loves one of them at the same time, like loves them to bits. Very strong, independent, very successful woman. So when I was grew up, the reason why people say, oh, Wonder Woman is like the true idol, you know, she's like, no, she's a demigod. She's not a normal human being. A demigod can stand there with all this power in their hands, and they can say, I'm a strong, independent woman. But no, but if you bring someone that's an NYPD cop, normal, everyday officer, you bring a cat burglar, like Catwoman. I always thought these women that were, they had to use every single thing that they were born with naturally. It could be their intelligence, their strength, or whatsoever. Not demigods.
Hmm.
So I think that, you know, those are the female characters that I always enjoyed reading.
Interesting
about.
Point there.
The books that made me.
We're specifically talking about comic books at the moment with Omar Sharif, who is the owner of Geeky Lizard, which is a gaming store. Remind everybody where that is actually located.
We are located in El Ghazal Mall, 2nd December Street. We are on the mezzanine floor, and we've been there for a third year now.
Mm-hmm.
We have the biggest vintage comic book collection in the UAE. We have a lot of tabletop games like Pokemon, Magic the Gathering. Also, we have done a lot of Dungeons and Dragons for you writers and want to make your own adventures. We had a lovely bunch of kids coming this weekend, a few girls as well. We had almost a full girl for D&D group. And I can't wait to see even more people enjoying the thing. I think D&D has started their own YouTube thing called D&D Beyond, like an animation. So it looks a lot of fun. I can't wait to look at it. And if people that, you know, watch Stranger Things, yes, we do exactly what those kids do on a weekly basis, but with the correct monster size and proportions.
I'm glad you clarified
yeah.
that.
Yes. That is not a Demogorgon. I am sorry. That is a Lovecraftian horror. There is a difference, boys and girls, and that is not a mind flayer, maybe a demigod of some sort. A mind flayer is a human size.
And I feel like this is something that you've been wanting to get off your chest for a long time.
Yes, people need to know.
I love the fact that you went through kind of the comic books that attracted you when you were a kid and then when you were a teenager and some of the darker stuff coming in there that you were interested in. And I particularly like your selection of comic books that you picked up when you were an adult. And I think there's some here that if you're not a fan, I particularly find it difficult to get into the superhero comics. And I like some of the ones that you've suggested here. So could we start with maybe Sandman?
Well, I was going to go in my 20s, the comic books that made my early 20s. I'm 36 years old, by the way, so you can imagine my comic books have evolved a lot since then. But I didn't tell you why I really enjoyed The Darkness, like why do I have this old collection. I also used to wear a white suit like him, and I used to have long shoulder-length black hair and a clean shave to look like him, because he was like the coolest villain ever, or the anti-villain. He was a mafia son, and the first page of the comic book, there's a guy in the parking lot and he turns on a Ferrari and smashes him across the wall, and then he picks up a girl by telling her he's gonna give her an acting role in The Simpsons. It was like, you know, like the smooth swath, like, you know, something like, I don't know, De Niro would be if he was, you know, a teenager.
Were you wearing this white suit just in your day-to-day or no, for a special occasion?
Winters only.
Oh, winter.
Winter only, because you wouldn't want to wear that in summer. And so you can say, you know, when you find characters that, you know, I don't know, find them really cool, you want to be them. And I guess what's cosplay is into. So when in my 20s, of course, we were looking into, you know, so I got a bit older and checking out. So I randomly saw The Sandman. and it caught my attention. I don't know if a friend recommended it to me. So I picked up The Sandman. I bought it from, I think, Virgin Megastore at the time. There was no Kunakuniya. And by the time I read the last one, I called Virgin and said, please book all of them for me. I had to go there. It was Mercado. And I found the entire collection. Volume 2 was missing. And I was like, where's the Volume 2? I booked it. And then they were looking everywhere. They couldn't find it. And then they found it in the manager's office. He was reading it. I guess he wanted to read it before the customer. Why is the only Volume 2 available at the time?
The thing I love about Sandman is that where he got the idea from. So apparently he was looking through this book of quotations and he found one. This is, Neil Gaiman is the author.
Mm.
And he found this quotation that said, sleep is the brother of death.
Mm.
And on the subject of kind of if Shakespeare wrote a comic, mm-hmm. the sleep is the brother of death immediately makes me think of To Be or Not to Be.
Mm.
That soliloquy is full of references to sleep and death.
Spoiler alert, Shakespeare is in The Sandman.
There you go.
Oh.
He has two appearances in it.
Two appearances in
and
The
it's
Sandman.
One of, and the first appearance, one of my favorite scenes in Sandman, where, you know, I read Shakespeare in school. Macbeth was the thing that taught us in school. And I didn't even know Neil Gaiman, by the way, that it is at the time. I wasn't a book reader. I didn't know writers. The only thing I knew was Stephen King because of the horror movies. And Clive Barker. So one of the best scenes in The Sandman is where they show in the Middle Ages and, you know, the Shakespeare times. And he's meeting up with Shakespeare. And he's basically, Sandman told him, did you finish the play? So Shakespeare had his group, you know, caravan, travelers, actors and stuff. He's like, yes, the audience is just across the hill. So he's like, okay, they set up, and across the hill, on the other side of the hill, this electrical thunder door opens, and this like elemental thunder elemental is the one keeping it open, and pours through the door the fae, fairies and goblins and bogards, and it was Tatiana and Oberon, the queen and the king of the fairies, leading the way. And next thing you know, as they're sitting to watch. So they were performing Midsummer Night.
Midsummer Night's Dream. Yeah.
Midsummer's Night Dream. So apparently the twist is the Sandman told Shakespeare to write that story based on his personal experiences with the Fae. So they were real beings and the Sandman told him to write about them. And it's quite funny. Tatiana and Oberon were sitting there watching. This looks familiar. And they were, how they were drawn was so smug and beautiful. And they're just sitting there, and all the audience is sitting there, and like there were bogarts and goblins, and they're like, should we eat the actors? And they're like arguing, no, they don't taste that great, especially the females. And it was like funny, like little speech bubbles you can read here and there. And that's one of the most entertaining scenes.
I think The Sandman is brilliant for kind of literary crossovers and intertextual references. So if you're into that kind of thing, there is, not only is it brilliant, but there are quite a few to sink your teeth into as well.
Also, sorry to interrupt, for most people that don't know this, the writer and the author of The Sandman is the author of the American Gods show, which people have been enjoying last year. Same writer.
Yeah. Neil, the amount of things that Neil Gaiman has actually done just baffles me. The other one I wanted to very briefly talk about is Why the Last Man and 100 Bullets, and we will do that when we come back very briefly. Before we go away, this is Neil Gaiman talking about the appeal of The Sandman across generations.
When I'm going to signings, I'm meeting people in their 60s who bought Sandman number one when it first came out. And I'm meeting people in their 30s and even in their 20s who, you know, there are people in their 20s who weren't born when Sandman number one came out and who are holding their copy of Sandman number one to get signed that their mum bought. And it's big and it's important to them.
That's Neil Gaiman talking about how different generations are still enjoying his comics, young and old, and will probably continue to do so. Deborah has just texted in and she says, I love Omar's passion for comic books. They are such an underrated form of literature.
The books that made me.
So Omar Sharif is the co-founder of Gaming Store Geeky Lizard, is 100% Emirati-owned business, and he's talking about the comic books that made an impression on him growing up. And we're kind of in the adult period of this whole phase at the
early
moment.
Early 20s now.
We've spoken about The Sandman, and there are a couple that I really want us to talk about. So when I looked these up, I was super excited. Why The Last Man? So just if you're not familiar with it, it's post-apocalyptic science fiction. And I think it's probably the most realistic of all the ones that you've spoken about today as well. So give us the basic concept of this.
Well, reality is a concept in your head, so I think Sandman's really real, but you know, it's up to people, are up to debate there.
That's a conversation. We don't.
Conversation to go. But Why the Last Man and 100 Bullets, both by DC Vertigo, and they're both basically realistic comic books. There's no supernatural, there's no heroes, superheroes. Why the Last Man is about a guy and his monkey got stuck in an airtight room. And when they got out of the room, all the men, or everything with the male gene on the planet, has died. So there, the world was nothing but women, and there was two guys, and it became crazy politics where some groups want to use him to to have kids and stuff, you know, continue mankind, and some want to kill him, that to end all male on the planet.
It's a really interesting and topical comic now.
Yes.
And also, what I liked about the description was, yes, you've got the issue with there being no men except this guy, Yorick, and his capuchin monkey called Ampersand, which is the best name for a monkey. Yeah. But many women die from disasters caused by men's deaths, such as plane crashes, because they're not the ones piloting the planes, because you know, they are at the mercy of a lot of industries that are run by men. So they have to kind of learn how to pick all this up when the men are gone, which is a really interesting concept.
And Why the Last Man, I think, got picked up recently, or they're talking about making a show or a movie out of them with, what's the guy's name from The Matrix?
Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves. And it goes on and on. And you know, the show is really short, so we have to cut this really short. You know, we can go for another 3 or 4 hours talking about this. So after Why the Last Man, I got into 100 Bullets, which was amazing. It's basically, you know, somebody will come out of jail or something, or they'll blame someone for, they had misfortune in their lives. And a guy would come, Agent Graves, with a suitcase. He'll give you a suitcase and say, the real person that caused the misery in your life, is his photo and his contact details and his location is in this suitcase. You've got a gun and 100 bullets, and nobody in the world can touch you as long as you use these 100 bullets. So if you kill someone, you can get away with it.
It's the concept is really interesting because it asks that question. So if you could act on the desire of violent revenge and given the means, would you do it? And I think that's something that comic books do really well across the board, is they ask that question, what if, almost better than any other medium.
Yes.
They're always asking questions. And when I looked up the description for 100 Bullets, I was thinking, maybe this is what would happen if Quentin Tarantino wrote a comic book. It would probably be something like this.
Like, I've read 100 Bullets probably 3 times, the entire thing, and it blew me away how well written it is. The characters are so, you know, you can feel them, the character, their existence and reality. You think you can bump into this character at any moment.
One of the things that's come up throughout the discussion as well is you've often mentioned things being picked up and being turned into series. And I know, Natalie, you're going to go and see Deadpool 2.
Yes,
later
today at 3 p.m. Excited.
I hope you enjoy it.
There is a character in Deadpool, and he showed up. You can ask my wife, and she will quote this. He squealed like a little girl. I was like, oh, my God, that's him. You know, it's like, it's one of my favorite villains. And when they did him perfectly in the movie, and I was blown away. It was so well done.
It's always satisfying when the adaptation matches the idea that you have in your head. I was thinking about this the other day, because we're always talking about reboots and retellings. It feels like we're kind of in the age of retellings and reboots. I mean, from Disney, they're remaking all of their films, you know, but in live action form. And I think, for stories to have longevity in this day and age, and why these comic book characters are so popular, is they need to be adaptable. So in an age of reboots, of retelling narratives, they need to be able to adapt. And that's something that blockbuster superhero films, comics are doing really well. But even before these blockbusters, I think that comics as a narrative form have never been linear anyway, which is why they're really good at doing this. So for example, you've got versions of Superman narratives where Superman goes bad, or alternate universes telling alternate tales. So I don't know about you, but I think that's part of why they're so adaptable and so flexible.
Exactly.
They've been doing it for years.
Like, Superman has over like 50 or 100 or some ridiculous number of different costumes from different versions. There's a Red Superman, the Red Sun, where instead of him, his capsule falling in the U.S., he's fallen in Russia. So he's gone with a red costume with the sickle inside.
Really?
Yes, where he's basically, some people would call, a villain. And there's a version of Batman when he's older and he fights an older Superman, and it's called Batman the Dark Knight, written by Frank Miller. They made an animation out of it, and it's just brilliant. and it's just really
as well done. Real diehard fan, do you ever see the film version? Because you know, with anything, whether it's comics or anything, sometimes you see the film version and you're like, ah, oh, they missed so much from
all
the book.
All the time.
Yeah. So do you are you a big fan of the film versions?
Here's a mistake most people, because I also studied media and post and pre-production for movies. So when you make a movie, you're trying to surprise the audience. And I can understand when they make changes. So if one of those diehard fans is going to sit there, this is what's going to happen next, and yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. They know everything, and then they watch a trailer like 30 times and write the whole script on Reddit. Ruins the fun for everybody else. But then if they doesn't go their way, they go, oh, it's not like the comic book. So you can always have, you can't make everybody happy.
Yeah.
But, for example, we call Ryan Reynolds from Deadpool the savior of the Marvel Universe because he's done a brilliant job. And, you know, DC sadly did a rush race where they had to rush to catch up with Marvel, and I think that was their downfall. They should have taken their time and ignored their competition and just do their own thing.